can I just throw it to officials from the Department of Justice and tell us how to proceed insofar as the costing of the financial capital and the amount? Who is taking us forward?
I think that would be me. Thank you. I believe you've been given copies. To be honest, we've made changes since, but unfortunately, we've already provided you with copies of the old one. So it's just basically the name, a change of the name, but I'll guide you through it, okay? Just briefly, I'm going to discuss a quick overview of the funding approach, then the draft casting of the Transitional Consultative Council, that's where the name change comes in, and then the draft casting of the Legal Ombudsman.
Right. Take us very slowly. Some of us are with figures. We want to look at those figures very, very
I'll do some. Please, at any time, stop me if you feel I'm going too fast. Okay. The scheme of the bill provides funding of the National and Regional Council by the legal profession itself. So we're not going to be funding the legal profession. The proposal in Clause 98 of the bill, it has been searched to provide for a cost analysis exercise. I think JB discussed that previously, indicating that that will form part of the function of the Transitional Council. So the public funding is in respect of the Transitional Consultative Forum and the Legal Services Ombudsman. And the Ombudsman is to succeed the Transitional Consultative Forum in using its structure and resources. If I can start with the... I call it the TCH for short. Okay. You'll see that the costing, the total for the 3-year period is 54.4 million rand. My pages are a bit different to yours, not yet. I think it's page 3. It's a summary for the Transitional Consultative Forum. So you'll see there, this is a summary, and year one we started at 2014-15. Obviously this is all dependent on when this is approved, when the bill is approved and the council actually comes into place. So our costing has been basically at this stage based on the next financial year. And our costing, we make use of inflation, the inflated figures that are given by National Treasury when we do our NTF process, they provide for all departments. Now on this summary you'll see this compensation of employees, which is your employees employed to the forum. This does not include your counsellors' fees when they attend the meeting. It's your assets, which is your startup costs, your goods and services, that includes the retainer fee and travel, and then your facilities. The facilities was an estimated cost, and facilities management was what it cost to actually rent the premises, and this includes reasonable costs. To go to the next slide, this is the employees. This is the brief we were given on the employees and the different levels. And this is the salaries for the different levels. So you'll see there's a secretariat and there's a research unit. The secretariat has got a chief executive officer, a deputy CEO, a media liaison officer, there's a director, the administration officer, admin messenger, all the normal staff that you have for the commission. Then there's a senior legal researcher and legal researcher. spreadsheet quickly. It's all directed for admin officers. These are the ones that are more than one. 6 tested personal assistants, and then 2 legal researchers and 1 senior legal researcher. Any other questions on this slide?
Share the data pattern in what earlier settlement. I think they stand up and then they have a little bit framework. But it's neither in terms of the collaboration. They have one that probably different and one digital. Based on their facilities, finance, and WC management, interface with the stakeholders of the coordination of the national regional council and all.
The director chair was the director for legal education, which is quite an intricate part of what the law will provide in terms of services.
Yeah, I do have a background as an ombudsman, and I believe they're very similar. So one is human resources, the other one is finance administration, and then you get your general administration, and the one that you just indicated. Okay. Then we get to your goods and services. Let me explain to you, I've put two tables on top. You have a number of council members of 21, but this year you're talking this morning about 23. So obviously this is a draft and it's a working document. If you change anything, we'll obviously update the costing accordingly. So this was based on 21 council members, and they're attending 3 meetings a month. So that includes the subcommittee meetings. Therefore, if you times that number of members, number of meetings, you get 756 meetings a year. They retain a fee. $3,700, that's what the estimated amount of legal agreed on. And that's how you get to the cost below. And then also, you'll see underneath is transport and accommodation, because some of them, a lot of them will be in Gauteng, but a lot of them will not. So we've estimated that at least 66% of them will be traveling. And this, and the cost of an average trip, and I believe the trip sees in and out in a day, is 3,000 Rand. So, cost below for the booking services, you'll see there's a retainer fee. So that was based on the information about the transport accommodation as well. And then we've estimated the other goods and services for the daily running, which is your library books, your flip phone, your fax, your stationery, everything else. It's 5% of your compensation, the personnel cost. Your major cost driver will obviously be your travelling and your payment of your council members. On the next slide you'll see that, the access. I haven't put it in detail, but basically it's your normal tables and chairs and desks and conference room that you will require your reception desk and so on. What we do when we do the costing, our department has got thresholds. So if you, for example, costing for a director or a chief director, I mean, we have standard thresholds, and we use the same thresholds for this, for the costing. And then, as I indicated, the facilities include the premises and medical costs. You'll see when I go to the ombudsman that the costs continue from there. So yeah, if you look at the previous slide, you'll see I mentioned the inflation. So these are the inflation figures as per the Treasury guidelines. When you get to the ombudsman, you'll see that the inflation figures are set at 5.5, because they haven't given us figures that far ahead, but we've taken the average of the current figures. Can I move on to the ombudsman? The ombudsman, you'll see, we didn't put a title because obviously it's going to be a continuous entity. It won't only exist for a period of 3 years. And this is again a summary. We didn't put in which year because it totally depends on when the bill is approved, but this is basically a follow-up of the Transitional Council. So if you go to the employees here, it is the ombudsman, a deputy ombudsman, their personal assistant, administration. I can give you a breakdown. I just put a summary because obviously it's too much for the slide. Okay, but your administration is your receptionist and all your administrative people. It also includes the administrative head and his or her secretary. Then it's human resource management, your document management, your finance and supply chain management, and then your case management, which is your OSD, the legal OSD. Any questions on the employees? Sure.
I think besides 12 case workers, considering the massive workload that the ombudsman is going to have.
We were actually given the brief, so I'm not sure who actually made the decision. We just did the costing on the 12. I don't know if JB can maybe shed light on why there's 12 case workers.
Considers the huge amount of disciplinary actions. What we spoke about 40,000 just in one province. Many of those will end up, could end up being referred to the ombud as well, where people are unhappy with the outcome or members of the public aren't happy with the legal services rendered to them. I suppose one's got to start with something. I don't know what you're going to receive. One's got to try to, but when we as members of parliament have to consider the costing of the bill, we need to gauge on what basis these estimates are calculated. Caseworkers, legal, I suppose one should compare to what other institutions have got as well.
Yes, on the road, so it's quite a way we have taken. The ombuds will be linked to the various national and regional councils, and you could find people who are linked to those councils, and you could classify them in terms of the areas. And we looked at the Inspectorate of Corrections Prisons, in terms of case management, also look at the Office of the Arm Protector, in terms of how they deal with their complaints.
Rate, what we usually use an annual inflation rate. and currently the Treasury guidelines, you look at the previous years, there is 5.2, 5.3, 5.6. So what we do is we make an average of that. This is very difficult to determine, even if this month, or let's say for April it's 6.2, what it's going to be in 3 months' time. So what they do is they do a calculation which they advise all departments to use. Usually they used to tell us 6%, you said they tell you 5%. So we decided to rather take an average on the 3 years. We thought it was a more accurate at this stage. But they haven't as yet officially guided departments because that's too way in the future at this stage. Okay, moving on to the goods and services. The goods and services, we didn't do a detailed on exactly what they're going to use. We actually wrote an average of 10%. Now you'll see this is more than the Judicial Council because yeah, we're not working on costs for councillors and so on. So 10% of your employee costs, if you go back to your summary, you will see there, if your employee costs are 21.9, then your business service is 2.1. Your assets, we do have the assets for startup costs still at this stage because there's a lot more staff obviously than what the Transitional Council has if you take into account all the case workers. So they of course require more furniture and equipment. But it's only in the first year. And then as indicated previously, the facilities you'll see carried on from the Transitional Council to the Ombudsman. It's going to be the same premises.
Thank you, Chair. There are a few principles we wanted to converse with the court from the court investment. Firstly, it's our view that the transitional council or consultative forum must be situated separate from the minister and the department so that one can promote a very conducive environment for engagement with the issues far away from government, because that's by the minister. So we are not going to hold them in momentum or some. There will be somewhere else there that is Venturia, whatever it is. And then that building that we are going to procure, we anticipate that that building will also will continue as a permanent feature of the office. So that hence the funding for the ombud will not start with the building, because we hope and assume that the council will move out of that building. It's a state-funded building, paid for by the Director General. So we are not going to house the council one day in the building. When the structure finishes its work, the parliament have got all its reports, whatever. Then they will transit to their own environment. It is for this reason we say the transitional arrangement for which you are paying for has enabled them, the profession, to plan their future. Now we must read that in line with what we discussed at the previous meeting, and that's on page 92 of the page. I'll ask the members to go to page 92, subclause 98. That's the insertion we've suggested. That should facilitate that. that clause in general falls under 98. Clause 98 in general deals with the powers and functions of the consultative forum of Transitional Council. Now we've included this part. We propose the inclusion of the following: that the Transitional Council must take into account the procurement and conduct a cost analysis of the operation of the council and the council, and make recommendations to the council stroke minister for consideration by parliament as contemplated in section 4 on the funding thereof. We say due to effective and efficient implementation of the act. Now that's where we're coming from, right from the scheme of the act. One, we don't know what the bill will cost the profession. We don't know. Two, we don't want, we can't even project what will cost the profession. What we know today, we know it's easy to determine how much cost the Law Society of South Africa to conduct this operation. We can get from the annual report of the Law Society's respective how much it costs the KZN Law Society and the non-profit. GCB can share with us how much it costs to organize function, to perform functions that that will become part of this arrangement. But those are functions, those are costs which the Transfer Council can make reference to. So we do not want, to pursue the GCB and say, please, we want to come and cost our operation when the operation is planned operation. We do not want to go there to the law site and say, what's your cost? We say to them, we create an enabling environment through the Transfer Council for it to confirm your own cost. You are in the majority, the council is yours. We pay you money to be a resident. Hence, from that cost analysis, for which they will get actuaries, for which they can get people who know how to do the costing. As their own, they can then come and advise Parliament and say, as a Transfer Council, because all the work of the council comes to Parliament. They will then say to council, after we've done a cost analysis and projecting the startup of the council and the regional council, it will cost the profession so much to run its operation, and the profession will derive its funding from the following source, because they are not going to. So we provide an enabling environment. As you can see from the presentation given, the total cost for the TC on the first page of the presentation is 54,461,000. That's the cost of the Transfer Council. That's the cost, that investment that government will put into ensuring that the profession become transformed, rationalized, constructed, in addition that it establish a costing analysis that will help itself. So we are helping the profession. We don't want them not to have funding to conduct a cost assessment. We are assisting them. So that 3 years after the Transfer Council, they should be on their feet and understanding that all these costs are putting in here will then be absorbed by the office of the ombudsman. We know that some of the people that were appointed, that will be appointed for the TC will go with the council, your new council structure. But that's why we're not very explicit in terms of the post structure of the ombudsman. But we anticipate that the cost we've put in there from national treasury in terms of MTF will then be absorbed by the cost of the support structure that the ombudsman will require to remain a permanent feature of the institution. So that's how we've approached the costing analysis. And the two go together with what we've discussed in the transition arrangement so that they are empowered. So we would not be able to present to this house that to the profession this is the cost that will achieve the profession. But we are saying we are presenting an enablement through the Transfer Council so that they've got now the house can basically put some time frame. You may want that the issue of the cost analysis come first in terms of the Transfer Council because you don't want it to run over 3 years. It's something they can do quickly at the beginning. So that it's very clear what is going to cost them, two, where they're going to find the funding, and three, how many councils will they be able to establish immediately based on their funding model. So that's the approach we have taken in terms of the costing approach to this bill. Other than those three aspects, there are no other costing implications that arise from the bill.
I've looked at you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and I think the attempt is to deal with the dilemma that we face with as MPs when we have to pass legislation. What is the cost of implementation, both to the state and obviously to the profession? That is part of our duty as well. But this is useful. Whether it goes far enough is a question, because firstly, my first question relates to the cost analysis itself. The funding for that come from that your fees, your budget? I mean, those people will do the cost analysis, because you spoke about other economists or other people having to come in and do that. Then you need another budget for the Transitional Council to do that. That's something you might have to think of. Secondly, the issue is for consideration by Parliament. Now, is it a possibility that this cost analysis might suggest that the cost of the Legal Practice Council is in excess of what it is costing at the moment, and therefore funds should be appropriated from Parliament? I wouldn't be necessarily opposed to that, but is that a possibility that, in fact, not everything, but some costs for the running of the Legal Practice Council could be, as it is presently formulated, there's nothing to suggest that it can't be. They will come up with a cost analysis. They will make a consideration to Parliament. Parliament might say, well, in view of the costs, we, as Parliament, suggest that some money is appropriated from the state, towards costing that. But clearly that is hypothetical, one doesn't know, and speculative. I think that to me is probably the most important part, is an accurate cost analysis, whether it's done at the beginning or at the end. It's obviously a crucial aspect, because we need to get the buy-in of the professions for this bill to work, and we need their capacity. And then the other last point relates to whether this is all the costs. We did broadly discuss the issue of the seekers and their involvement in this, and approaching them to give us advice as to what funds. Is there no any cost implication for them as well? When we spoke about the possibility even of teachers funding your pupils, again, it's something we haven't decided on. One doesn't know whether that is necessary, but one needs, because of the broad implications of this bill, one needs to have, as far as possible, accurate envisaged costing. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to know as to whether the money, the 54 million, 151,000, will be available, and by when will it be available? What's the timing of all of this? And to say that it's a good idea that you will, at the end of the Transitional Council, allow them to do their own cost analysis and also indicate for. But it then actually also comes to the whole issue of the role of the minister in the council. Because for now, we feel like we're actually putting the cart before the horse. And then it actually then determines the role that the minister plays in the council. But just give your idea of what you think of it.
To replace the law society.
And also it must be looked from the whole scheme of it, that some of the fundamental aspects of the transformation will be resolved from this negotiated process under such happens, and oversight of the parliament. There have been discussions over the past 12 years, 15 years, 15 years over some of the aspects which there, on which there's no control, and they've been placed purposely another mandate in the such account so that they get the resources of the world. So, and there's quite a number of hands who have mentioned those aspects of the society. So, it's only to better place.
So if the social workers can come and say we want to restructure and all other professions, it means the parliament or government would be required to pay for this. Now I can understand why people were saying that we must pay for it in our country because it would be expensive. Because indeed, a council of people who have not agreed for 15 years. And then you don't have the minister that we have the power to do anything. Let me stop there. Some of these things are necessary. You know, in the 80s, I was involved with the Zimbabweans who were fusing the bar. They finished it a long time. The system is stable, is working. And I don't know with what type of democracy that you can debate for 15 years when people have problems. There's no access to justice. We're debating for 15 years. Thank you.
Chair, I'll just deal with maybe two aspects and then just specifically add to it. That's the Honourable Swart, just so that there's clarity with regard to the funding model and where is the money going to be coming from. Perhaps we'll project it. The determination is over a 3-year period, and on a yearly basis, the figure that we have anticipated will be what will be required from the yearly budget. As to the concern about whether the new structure might cost much more in excess of what the current funding happens with the resource societies, so whether additional funds might be requested by the minister, that's a double-edged sword that the profession will consider carefully. Because the independence is something that regards itself viciously, and rightly so. So, you know, you want money from government, and it comes with whatever it comes with. So the profession is absolutely wary of that. As to the current status of what the profession is doing, I'm well aware, because I've had discussions with the funders as well as the Royal Society officials. They're currently in deliberations about a funding model that they know will not be anything close to what the current funding arrangement is, simply because the current funding model has caused much concern by the publicity fund. And they know that they would have to scale down on whatever is covered by the fund insofar as member interest representation work is covered by the publicity fund. So what is member interest, the chairperson, that will have to be paid by members. And it can be anticipated that in discussing the funding arrangements, the requests for funding are going to be much less than currently is. be envisaged is that in having to determine your regional councils, although what the bill captures is that the proportional representation must flow into the regional councils, that is not to say that the numbers remain the same. So if your council level is sitting at 23, it does not mean that your regional councils will have 23, but the proportionality of the council members will permeate through the regions. So simply put, you could have a provincial council, regional council, of 9 persons, proportionally. And so the hard question about the whole funding model will be something that the profession will have to interrogate as to what is most efficient in terms of maintaining all of those structures. And I have no doubt that in so doing that, the costs are going to be interrogated, and the roles of the regional councils will be discussed, to the effect that when you talk about a regional council, it could well be envisaged that there will be regional offices, regional committees, because what is the role of the regional councils? Just two things. One is admissions and setting a discipline. The bulk of it is discipline. Admissions are a fraction of what happens. You're lodging your debts for regional councils, and I think we talked about a national role. But your discipline is your most important cost center in terms of the activity of the regulatory body. And there's nothing else that is envisaged except the inclusion of your law schools. And so your existing law schools and how that's going to be retained will be also considered in the scheme of having to work out whether it's still going to cost 200 million or whether it's going to cost 100 million. And I think the fund has said you've got to come up with a workable model in order to allow the continuous investment of the fund with the legal provision. So I mentioned this in the context of whether there will be an anticipation that more monies might be needed from the ministry, and that of course is something that the profession would have to look at.
Now,
if we say the bulk of the work is discipline and admission, that we are talking about senior researcher, legal researcher, directors, and so on, what's happening to the director? Because if you want to discipline people, we need somebody who can prosecute, and then we need somebody who can cite. This is a big infrastructure. Now, let's say for argument's sake, to establish it, and we have to establish it in all the provinces or as region, is going to cost $12 billion. How do you go to the public, that is hunger, and say that you are creating structures for lawyers for 1 billion to sort their own problems? So this thing is going to cause problems down the line. People say they want to self-regulate themselves, but at the same time they say pay us for regulating ourselves, don't interfere with our independence. Why then should the public get involved in the matters of people who want to be left alone?
Can I just say, everybody is concerned about the time that it's taking before this is legal professionals, some people, as you say, were even overtaken formed it to say that they had taken away and took it out of their field. And that was what they going to Orleans by the gate, transformed from the ground. And then there was a stage after the deal was tabled, after submissions and comments were made, the legal profession indicated to say, can give us an opportunity because we are still talking, we're still engaging. And there was a feeling that maybe let there be some opportunity in case they reach some consensus, even if reaching some consensus, but they minimize the points of differences and the like. That has happened because there was some delay. The Justice Committee didn't move forward to start deliberating. And then, but despite the fact that that opportunity was given, there are some also kinds of differences in the life. Now, you realize that, as you are saying, it's people who seem not to be able to reach an agreement, to reach a consensus. Then, as the legislature, we also have the role to play. In other ways, we have to play our role in legislate in going forward and legislate on this process, because it cannot be left like that. It has been there for some time. It has been there for quite a long time. Mr. Ransmeyer,
chairperson, there was another question that was raised as to whether the Transitional Council consulted the forum would replace the functionality of the law societies. The bill does talk to that aspect, which is this, that the current operations of the legal profession will continue until the bill is finalized. And even when the Transitional Council kicks in, the work and functioning of the law societies will continue, bar councils will continue, until the bill is gazetted. At that date, those functions will then be done by the new structure. So the envisaged consultant of the forum is exactly that, a forum to deal with all of those hard issues that professions couldn't for the last 15 years sort out, and it's placed a financial burden on the government. And of course, part of the deliberations the committee will have would be, should we give them 3 years? Do we not just give them 1 year? You know, those are the questions I'm sure the committee will look at. Do they still need 3 years to sort their lives out and burden the fiscus with 3 years of funding? Or can they really talk about getting everything done in a year? I'm sure those would be interesting to get to.
Yes, Chair, I just want to respond to 2 points, and I will not belabor the point of the time frame. GCB came here, they said they want a transition of 6 months, and we told them we'll be the happiest people in this world if you can get their principles in 6 months. It saved our lives. They said 6 months. They said if it comes to a point where we don't need a social council, we said we'll welcome them.
Yeah.
We have. Yes, we said we have put this, remember, if we had not put this bill, if we had not introduced this bill, all the aspects that still confront ordinary political institutions will still persist. Now that we have put the bill, we have been able to get commitment to the process. 2, there's an end line. It's not clear so beyond. The minister, if it is the way the scheme of the health is calculated, that they must do this and prepare, give input, the minister must do regulation. If the deadline of 18 months passes, the minister will continue to come to Parliament. And Parliament, that's why it's an oversight type role that Parliament always has. So Parliament, as the guardian of the fiscal, will always be taking very decisive steps in terms of, no, we can't go beyond this point. We can't go beyond this point. So it will not happen that the money of taxpayers is used to benefit. This money is not used to benefit profit. practitioners. We're not going to practice okay. It's used to strengthen the public and strengthen the public in the preliminary services to ensure that ordinary people have access to the services and stems from the regulatory function of government rather from the constitution, that the profession of lawyering need to be regulated. Currently not unregulated, and if government take a role of regulating for the role that it's responsible for and for the public interest is bringing into the free, it has to take those steps. And those are the kind of the basis. And we said, and that was also the principle, that if you regulate the put there, you don't have an ombuds, you don't have a monitor beyond the lawyer, for lawyers. There must be an institution where ordinary people can be able to get their problems whatever dealt with in the context of the independence of the profession. And the legal ombuds exist elsewhere, and government, public servants pay for those institutions because it's a return back to ordinary people to make sure that in the context of sales regulatory framework, there's a monitoring mechanism that ensures public interest is protected all the time. And also to make sure that the minister, as far as possible, play a regular role but does not interfere with the independence of the profession. From that perspective, I don't think we should even contemplate that Parliament will do will appropriate any funding to legal profession, because beyond the regulatory function, we'll have a function that's operating whatever, and the profession will have to find ways that they run themselves whatever. Hence, I'm saying that the principle of the funding here is not necessarily to assist the profession itself. It's to provide a regulatory environment by the state. And to the extent that that environment will be finalized, I think that's why the mandate of using the fiscals may I see it pending. But obviously, through CITAS, through community services, through whatever, those payments are not your profession, are to people. So they empower ordinary practitioners to get to profession. So if we go to CITA to get 7 million to fund in claims, whatever, they're not funding the profession. They're funding, they're enhancing opportunities for ordinary people to enter the profession. And that, hence, that money will not go to your bank account, will not be, even if it may be managed by the council or whatever, it will basically not be intended to the council. It will be intended to that person who is in the city and bushbuckers who wants to become a lawyer, an advocate, whatever, at the end of the day. And that's how we see it in terms of this. To come to, I think, the issue of whether the money is available. Firstly, the figures which are put here, I estimate, are based on the similar institutions that do complain, that do whatever, etc. And it may not go there. As I'm saying, they will look at public protector, look at the law side of South Africa, so that what they're doing, in terms of meetings every day, will look at whatever. So those are estimates. It may go there, it may not go. But what we have done, the MTF process is currently underway in terms of making inputs for the 2014-15 budgetary process. And all we said it's important, and the major cost driver, the main cost driver will be that of setting up an infrastructure. This will probably be a certain gauge meeting, whatever. Hence, we have said that infrastructure, we look at it as being the part of the open infrastructure in terms of mental. And in terms of getting people, whatever, we did not want to provide a scenario where the DG would come and put government officials or whatever. We wanted to provide a compensation, a budget for employees that will be negotiated with by the TC itself when it gets established. So there will be meetings and engagement to provide mechanisms. But we have taken the bench, the precedent of what's happening in the law side, in the law side of South Africa today. How many people are there? Who does what every day? Who deals with whatever? And those gave us an indication that if government is going to provide, if the DG is going to provide an element of funding, we have to have somebody who's going to take care of those fees cuts to make sure that the government costs are correct, to make sure that they're banding in a country teaching. If there's going to be an issue of interface and political arrangement with their profession, with whatever, there have to be somebody to look around those aspects. So things from the perspective, but that doesn't mean that all the people, whatever is in employment, there will be a process that will basically do the head count of who must come in there, who must do whatever. And it's a regulated environment. Hence we have said that Parliament is all the time from the full person of the TC. The bill makes the minister report to Parliament regularly on each and every step as we finance this regulatory environment framework before the statute.
Fusion by stealth. It was all about the engagement by the government with the
why I say the real justification for creating a legal practice council is the economic one. But not once in every version of this bill that has appeared over the years, not once has the idea of legal costs surfaced until Minister Radebe, now as the fifth minister, tabled it and asked for something which we don't think goes far enough, it doesn't really get to the problem. He asked for a fee structure. We have been doing, a lot, all of us, a lot of creative thinking to try to get to the root of that is the real problem. And the people have precisely not been cared for. And it is precisely because we insist that consumers, they're called consumers in every other jurisdiction, they're clients of the legal profession, but they are the people. They are the people. And our people cannot afford legal services. And in a constitutional democracy, that is unacceptable. That's precisely why we are grappling with the economic issues, and we're going to ask this Legal Practice Council to explore not just different forms of legal practice that was in the bill as tabled, but we're going to ask the Legal Council to go far further than the idea of a fee structure. We want them to do an inquiry. So to that extent, I actually agree with Dr. Motseka. I think everything that went wrong is that the bill was never about the people to begin with. It was about some battle with the legal professions who were perceived as being somehow part of the old order, and government wanted to beat their heads together. Now I speak, I know as one who left the Justice Committee around 96, and many of you have been grappling with these problems endlessly. You've seen the professions over and over and over again. So in that sense, you know far more about what happened during all of these years. But having come in now back to justice during this parliament, and having read up on what has gone before, that seems to me precisely the problem, that nobody was thinking from the point of view of the people. Now that we will fix, but we will fix it only if we say that reason for being of the Legal Practice Council is to make sure consumers, clients, or the people have access to justice. To that extent, I agree with Dr. Mutella. But so, you know, don't blame the professions only, because I think what was put on the table was always about how the profession must function, how it must function vis-a-vis government. And it seems to me that what spoiled the thing from the start, that there's a residual longing for the idea of fusion on the side of your esteemed party. And I think, you know, we're not going to do that. It doesn't work. Everywhere they have fused, because we have read our way around the world, believe me, everywhere fusion has been effective, the bars have survived. There's a genuine need for the advocates profession. The bars survive, the bar council, back into being. So it's an illusion anyway. Forget fusion, it's an illusion. Because there is a place for both professions. I personally happen to believe that South Africans need, above all, the small attorneys firm in the rural areas, in the towns, in the cities, but your small attorneys firm, as well as the big ones. We need those two to keep the economy going. And the advocate, the independent advocate who will take your case even if you are politically unpopular or socially unpopular. I really do believe in the two professions. I think there's going to be an evolutionary process. I think, you know, it won't look in 50 years' time the way it looks now. But that's fine, it has evolved. I think for now we need the two professions. I think that's what went wrong, Doctor. So if we can, we stand at opposite sides here, but if we can agree, serving the people is the whole point. And I don't think the bill did that until now. So if we can concentrate on that, and not on beating the professions over the brow, then we'll get somewhere. All I really wanted when I raised my hand was to check something with you. As JB says, the Bar Council at a certain point said, look, given this condition, we can move straight to the Permanent Council. But just remind me, I think that condition was the two chambers, wasn't it? What was it? They said, if this is in place, as far as we're concerned, we can go straight to the Legal Practice Council. I think on your side you felt it wasn't possible because the electoral procedure in
the various constituting bodies not so complicated that we have to have a constitution. Wasn't it that it?
No.
Please correct me.
No. In this book, we did not disagree with this. We said the 3 years is a model. I remember the chairperson of the GCP indicated that they could put in resources, they could take off time so that they get to the current council as quick as possible. If this happens, we said, look, once the key to council, it will benefit us as a state if the national council is the shortest. We'll put a maximum, we are not opposed to a shortest period of time.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think one of the GCB's arguments for going straight to the permanent structures was that they become the regional chambers. So all the advocates would fall under them. I mean, that's not... Yes,
these are voluntary associations. They don't need to join this outfit. They can go on existing exactly as that. I think it's fantastic. You should be embracing it. This is the Bar Council saying, we will voluntarily come in and become the chambers at the regional level. It's exactly what Mr. Spartan and I have been arguing. You can't get away from it. You do need two chambers. You can't bear the word for the committee. But you do need the two separate ones at regional level. We haven't finished until already. And of course, we believe also at the national level. But I think I'm right. I think that was the conditionality. They said if you accept that we sit in two chambers, then we can go straight to the permanent thing. So why don't we do that?
Can I take a Honourable Swartz's hand was up for some time. I have looked at everybody that's raised their hand.
The process has been a lengthy process of negotiations between the attorneys and the advocates and the government. Parliament has only been involved with this for 15 months. The bill was tabled on the 15th of May, 2012. So we have only applied ourselves for a relatively short time. In fact, at that time, it has only been this year. And that is why a number of deficiencies have been pointed out now already quite correctly, such as us not consulting with people looking for articles or students. This is a very far-reaching piece of legislation. The point is correct that it has been there have been various drafts from the executive side, but nothing has come to us as Parliament. That's the first point. I think, Chair, as well, the latter aspect about the 6 month period, I can't remember specifically whether it was tied up to chambers or that, but I think we also need to bear in mind that there's a vast difference between the GCB and the law societies. Now bear in mind the law societies are statutory bodies in terms of acts. They have numerous assets and liabilities that have to be collapsed. The General Bar Council is a voluntary association. They can say, well, we will participate, we'll nominate our members to the council, but our separate voluntary association will continue with our own set assets and liabilities. Whereas from the attorney's profession, it has vast consequences because all their assets and liabilities have to be negotiated. There are two bodies in one province. So all that's got to be negotiated. How are those assets and liabilities going to be divided? How are they going to be dissolved? That's not going to take 6 months. That's going to take a period. So I think that it is correct for the Transitional Council to have that maximum period. If they do it shorter, fair enough. But let us be careful to lay the blame at the hands of the profession.
Yeah.
I think it's an ongoing process, and if we look at even from government side, the initial proposals from government was that the council will consist mainly of ministerial representatives. That has been reduced now to three. He has done the right thing as opposed to previous ministers where there was
mandate of control. And we know that the central attack constitutionally will be that the minister can only provide a statutory framework for the legal profession, which regulates that the minister, the executive, cannot govern or manage the profession. So that would go to the heart of the independence of the profession, and that would be constitutional unacceptable. So I think there are a number of issues that we need to bear in mind. We've come a long process, and we want to finalise this legislation. But I think it's incorrect to say we, as Parliament, have been sitting for 20 years on the issue.
Thank you, Chair. I think at the end of the day, we really need to come to understand exactly what difference is this bill going to do, because quite obviously the people of South Africa are complaining of the legal costs, which are unaffordable. And that actually then impacts directly on access to justice. What do we do with this bill to ensure that justice is accessed by ordinary South Africans? And that has got a lot to do with the kind of systems and arrangements that you find within the legal profession. And for now, we talk about right of appearance for the attorneys, and then we talk about the referral rule. If we can clarify all of that, because that's where the problem is for the ordinary patient. Remember, the person has got to get paid the attorney, and they've got to go pay the advocate. And also, it actually also borders on all of these types of appeals and things. We need, even if that comes from another legislation, we need to be in the position to put all of that together and come up with a justice system that will really take care of the people of South Africa. Because, of course, the lawyers will be worried about themselves and their position. And this is why, to some extent, if we have to conclude this, we're not actually going to put them in front of them. Decide as to what needs to happen. Together with them, we'll engage. And when we feel that they are not being sincere enough, we need to say so. Because remember, this is about business for them. And now you want to enter into their business arena to say, we need to have your business changed. Business that has made so much money for some of them. And now you want them to actually be the ones that will guide you as to how to make it impossible for them to do business. So at the end of the day, what is important is really putting people of South Africa before anything else. But at the same time, taking into consideration the system that we have inherited, that is actually not putting the lawyers and advocates in South Africa on equal footing, for the reasons we all know. How do we redress that? That's what's important. So that at the end of the day, we have a system that is actually fair in terms of the people practicing in the profession, because also for those who practice in the profession, and the manner in which they practice in the profession, it has a lot of impact on how the public would then actually be in the position to access services. Because for now, legal service in South Africa is a scarce resource. And if it becomes a scarce resource, of course it's going to be expensive. But we have a whole lot of people who annually get qualified, they graduate from South African universities to become lawyers. How do we actually manage to pull everybody together and try and come up with a system that's really going to manage to serve the people of South Africa and serve them in a justifiable manner? Thank you, Chair.
Can I take
We know the biggest challenge that ever faced this country was when Mandela and the Klerk had to come together and dismantle the whole apartheid state and the Bantu state. And the Bantu state had their own
1996, this constitution that we use was in place. How can that not actually say to us that it is possible within a short time to transform the judiciary? Because from what is said, when people say we can move faster to the legal practice council, but for us to get there, allow us to regard ourselves as a regional structure. We can see that they don't want to change the structure. They just want to rename themselves something and stay the same. I think transformation is about change. And you can't say people must change themselves. I think there must be leadership provided by this parliament as to how things must work. And parliament must broaden the participation in the process. And let's hear, as he said, let's hear also other sectors of society on these matters, not just the lawyers, and speed up this thing. I can tell you the way we are approaching this thing. We are going to go for elections before we pass this bill. And the new MPs are going to start afresh. So this thing will never happen until we reach a point where the people start to lose confidence in the legal system itself. Apartheid was brought down by the people losing confidence in the legal system. And our failure to deal with this matter is going to lead to the same situation, and it will be unfortunate because we should look at what is happening in the country, everybody throwing things around and so on and so on. We have to arrest that situation by making justice accessible to the people. But for us to succeed, I think as parliament, we can't be negotiating. We must get public participation, but when the time to decide comes, we must decide. That's the authority that the people gave us, to take decisions and go forward.
I'm all for hearing the people's voice more directly on this bill, and I think where that will happen is in the NCOP process, when the bill goes to the provincial legislatures and the committees of those legislatures deal with the bill all over again. I think it's very important that people go. I mean, you know and I know, Chairman, as MPs, because we all have people, the people interacting with us all the time. We know that the two matters of great concern are firstly costs, which make justice inaccessible. But secondly, the disciplinary procedures, which will be another one of the achievements of this bill, if we get it right, because the disciplinary procedures run by the professions themselves in respect of advocates and attorneys respectively of lack transparency, frequently don't appear to satisfy the sense of justice or the actual pecuniary prejudice suffered by consumers. So I think that is what we will hear more from the people on, but I'm also hearing more directly from the people. I think the NCOP stage of this process is where that will happen. I have to say to Dr. Mocheha, I think he is, I have to disagree strongly that apartheid fell because people lost faith in the legal system. On the contrary, so many of the leading figures of the struggle precisely went to the courts to defend themselves and their cases. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons why South Africa managed to come through the transition, which is so close to our hearts. I'm a child of this transition. I had the honour of negotiating both of those constitutions. And it's precisely because both sides, the struggle and the system, they kept their faith in the law. And it is because of that that we were able to create ourselves a constitutional democracy based upon the rule of law. And I do not think it is true now either that people have lost any faith in the law. I don't. I think that people are skeptical about.
I didn't say that people have lost faith. I say if we continue on this route of
taking 20 years to finalize a piece of legislation,
all right,
we run the risk
of bringing the law itself into disrepute.
Exactly, yeah. So we're
all right. I thought you said in addition that it was because people had lost faith in the law that apartheid fell. All right. Then the clarification that I wanted to ask of my colleague, Kulani. Did she just say, because it would be a brand new argument which I haven't heard from the other side of the table, did she just say that she wanted equality between the two professions, advocates and attorneys? If so, what lack of equality is there? What is it that has just been said? I'm not aware of any lack of equality between the two professions.
I haven't actually mentioned equality. I talked about what you can actually just say as leveling the playing field in the legal club, in the legal profession. So that when I'm saying they should be on equal footing, you know historically how things have been in South Africa. So there's a number of complaints about the same system that we're trying to change. That's what I'm talking about. That it actually needs to be in such a way that all lawyers and advocates in the legal profession are on the same page. Leveling the playing field.
How are they not?
In terms of the profession and all of
okay,
that.
Okay, can I say I'm going to give opportunity. Thank you, Chairperson. I was in Durban the other day and the waiter that served me asked me, who is higher in stature, a judge or an advocate?
Oh, money.
and it said to me that the public perception is exactly that. And I think the comments that have been made is a generalization of the perception of the public that advocates appear to be more learned than attorneys. And that perception might come from the fact that there are more advocates that appear in the forum for which they train to practice and to hire. And maybe that's the perception that needs to be changed. And of course, the legal practice world is one medium in which that would seek to address that perception. But I want to just turn very briefly and respond to one of the questions that were raised by Honourable Smuts with regard to the issue of the sentiments, Chief Person, that you set yourself on a course to respond and go blind. Oh yes, it now comes to me. It now comes to me. I wanted the House to understand the warmth with which the GCB embraced the early process of the legal practice law, but it was premised on this. Let me explain. They conceded for many years that they are prepared to be part of the new structure, provided there was an accreditation model so that the GCB will continue to exist as it currently is, and it merely becomes accredited to the national structure. That in itself was completely shut down because it retained the current status quo and it did nothing of defining the need to have a unified regulatory structure. So it was premised on that and not premised on anything else.
It's with the bottom level. It's perfectly logical. It's what they didn't think. And that's where they reached the people first and foremost.
They made the supervisory regulator what? To fix the economics. Below it, to this day, is it the BSB, which is the frontline regulator for the bar. The SRA, which is the frontline regulator for the journey. And then the further bar council, etc. But, you know, they got it right. I'm not saying all their results are necessarily, because they are mind-blowing. The transformation, if you want to use that word, of legal practice in England is simply mind-blowing. But they set up the regulator to look at alternative business structures and costs. got it right, and for the consumer. And they left a few provisions to regulate themselves. And you have to, you have no choice. They write their own code, they write their own disciplinary. In the bodies which the butler and the bull simply wished to have accredited. Perfectly logical. It's because there is a deeper drive on the side with respect to the ANZ. It's a deeper homogenizing, leveling, unified practice. Nothing short of fusion, but I mean, that is why nothing comes out right. Because I think there's still a sort of a residual longing for fusion. And you know, if we don't face up to that, we won't get this bill right. And I repeat, fusion is an illusion. It doesn't work anyway. The thing shakes out into the two professions anyway, in every jurisdiction.
I have some follow-up for you.
Okay. You see, it's also very unfortunate that we sit in South Africa with a peculiar system of deep group culture. And then we go to Canada. We want to import a model from London. And London has not gone through the deep division that we have had. So that may be good for London, but it won't be good for us. Why don't we look at Nigeria? Why don't we look at Zambia? And look at Africa, how... But you are saying that... You are saying that the London people have got it through accreditation. I think that accreditation is preservation of treatment. But maybe our... We are going to end up being out of order, just running a critique of one another and not dealing with it. Because I think at the end of the day, we need to deal with this document and reach consensus and stop the other people without taking us. We have to really seek consensus on this document.
I was saying, for example, today when I came here, I thought today the chairperson, I should not be the reverend, the prayer at the same time. But I've made my commitments, my submissions before. I even tell the committee to say, when I started debating this thing, it was somewhere in the late 1980s, during the days of the DLC, Democratic Workers Congress, when we were strictly talking about the fusion of the bar and the side bar, we were calling upon disbanding the law societies. But we have moved away from that and say maybe we should not be asking for that. And then so as to find one another. But the officials have made a submission on the costing. I think let us try to move forward. Because really, I'm not criticizing any person who said something, but some of the things that you are saying, I think they should be said there in the plenary. And let the people, let's persuade our members there in the plenary, why this way or another way. And then, as you are saying, our duty now is to try to make some progress on this piece of the document that is before us.
Thanks, Chair. Indeed, it has been a long wait, and the people of South Africa are waiting for this bill. The legal profession is waiting for this bill. In terms of cost, I think let's go back to the argument that we need to actually have campaign so that it doesn't be a prolonged effort. I had the 6-month suggestion, which I think is unreal. Maybe we should actually just come up with something that will actually be something that's near enough to make the point that the transitional cancer manages to end up work before we stop funding it.
Okay. Thank you. Let me come on the side of the officials. We've had your presentation of the costing of the transitional cancer in the books. And then we will find have some time to deliberate and try to persuade one another as the Justice Committee. But for now, I see time it's 25 to 4. Right.
I don't doubt the ability of the officials to do this. And I think they have done the
microphone for record purposes.
I don't doubt the ability of the officials to deal with this question. And I think they have applied themselves and produced something that we can work on. And I don't think that we should be delayed by the question. Because we are not going to set up transitional nine transitional countries. We need one transitional country to take us. So I think the way the role you have channeled makes the transitional council necessary. We can't run away from it without running away from the bill. Why don't we accept that there will be a cost to setting up the transitional council and let them finalize that one? Of course, we are saying we need to establish the regional. There will be additional costs. But the reason why we can be phased in late, we don't have to rush to them. So we shouldn't kill this because we are afraid that there will be more cost as we do this. Yeah, so I think why don't we in principle accept this costing and move forward with that? And then tomorrow, and narrow our differences here. Because also to say that we will leave this to the NCOP. The NCOP will go and reopen this. And we won't have time. So I think we need to do as much as possible and lessen the need to go and rely on the NCOP.
Okay. Proposal, are we in agreement? Okay, thank you. I think sorry, was it running short of time?
Yeah.
But let me thank her in her absence. And then and say can we come back to the bill? Still something like 20 to 4. We've got something like 20 minutes. We can cover some of the clauses before we attend formality. Thank you.
Let me rule that in principle we accept this, we say.
There's been some support.
Oh.
Can I hear it loud and clear?
Yes.
Oh. Can you say it in your microphone for the microphone?
Yes, we are taking the coffee.
Okay, right. Well, thank you. This is I thank you in your absence. Thank you very much for the presentation. Yeah.
Accepting the time frames as discussed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Right, who is next?
Chair, thank you. We were on clause 23. Just before we proceed, I assume that we can step off clause 23. Just to get confirmation.
And may I just say, Chair, before we leave it on 5, and the Dyer draft, regional councils must be constituted in such a manner that so as to reflect the proportion of attorneys and advocates as far as we often stand, we want equality, parity. Same number of advocates as attorneys, and they must sit in their chamber. And there is, of course, a reason for that, and that is your committee clause, which gives a veto. There must be parity for not.
Right.
No,
and get a faith in it. Because at the moment, the legal practice council has 10 attorneys, 6 advocates. Now, this phrase says you must have the same proportion, whatever the numbers are, at the regional council. And I'm not stipulating that we do not accept 10 versus 6. It's just that we can take on that
The next clause where there was an amendment is clause 24, relates to admission and enrollment. In our previous discussions, the committee's deliberations, it was decided that subclause 24.3, the minister may, after consultation with the council, make regulations regarding admission and enrollment. And then the committee requested that the paragraph 3C be redrafted to be subclause 4, and that makes provision for the admission of persons. The minister may, in consultation with the council, permit a person or category of persons concerned to expeditiously commence practicing by virtue of his or her academic qualifications or professional experience. This was basically just a redraft to provide that the minister may, in consultation with the council.
Thank you for that. That was our concession and request that the word where it was previously in consultation, it bound the minister to have reached consensus with the council, and that is not permissible when you're dealing with international agreements. And that is the 3B. And we then suggested that we should change that to after consultation, which would enable the executive to fulfill its international agreements. And I think Mr. J.B. Swisson is eternally grateful for that.
But I mean, that's what the IRO didn't want enough to know.
But that was general. It was the whole committee, I think.
Okay.
But it came from our side initially. But it was everyone agreed with that, so that correctly captures
but,
that.
Why should the minister, only after consultation, determine the right of appearance of foreign legal practitioners to appear in courts of the Republic? Shouldn't that be in consultation? What's the problem with getting the council to go there? For A. I don't like the old C, the new 4 at all, anyway. Nobody has made the case yet for me for what this category of persons is. But the question for number one, A. Should the minister be able, after consultation, to determine rights of appearance?
I suspect, I'm not sure that we want the council to call government.
Not in case of people who agree.
Now, that for also says in consultation. Why not after consultation?
Because you know these people. Why is that clause there at all? There's someone in the way.
You know, this clause, I think, is properly worded. Say you find someone who has been a public prosecutor for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That person is certainly more educated in terms of practice than someone who has completed a master's degree who has never practiced. Now, why can't you simply say the minister may, after consultation, allow that person to practice?
But
because this too much co-governance.
What stops him from getting to practice anyway? I mean, what governs your right to practice is what we are putting into this law, which is we're replacing the attorneys and the advocates. I mean, what is stopping a 20-year prosecutor from enrolling as an advocate tomorrow? Or in the case of the attorney, what is stopping him?
No, if there's nothing stopping them, why should we then bind the hands of the minister to say in consultation with the
hands? But who are these people? I mean, we shouldn't be putting in provisions, but nobody can tell us what is it that is meant.
Mm-hmm.
And to give me a sense of what if somebody made an argument on why it's there, but I mean, I don't recall it. No, there is no reason for it.
So we had lengthy discussions about the need and the distinction between after and in consultation. And again, because of the need for independence of the profession, we as a committee agreed that in many cases, I can't remember the need for that, but I'm just raising the issue of the principle of the distinction between in and after consultation and reminding us of the lengthy discussions we had on that issue. The need for form, I don't remember why. If it is a situation of a public prosecutor that has practiced for many years, he applies to the council. The council is the one that must give, that must check whether he has required, whether he's done his legal practice training. That is the self-regulatory body. It's not for the minister to then bypass the council, who might have a legitimate reason, and the minister might differ from him. And here we have the example that is given of a public protector of 20 years. He will qualify in terms of the council. The council will then deal with his admission. So I can't recall what the particular category of persons concerned is. And I think it you know, and that is why we question this C, and I'm just trying to see what is the footnote said. The footnote, it doesn't help us. But we clearly, if you look at the footnote, on 15 August, the PC decided this must be in consultation. So we were in agreement as a portfolio committee.
No, only because we didn't know what that.
But I'm not saying, I'm talking about the principle of in and after consultation. What I'm, but now what the whole need for support is a separate issue.
Let's say for argument's sake, the category of people referred to would be those from disadvantaged background. And now you have a candidate that is going to say no, if you bring these people, you lower the standards. And they veto.
Trojan
in loyalty,
but you know as well as I do, a load of stuff.
You've been agreeing with
that don't that go out and say, now on the 11th hour you sleep.
I remember, even the Buddha says, what we must do is only the best way in the public is whether they bring debate. What does in the public interest mean? So they say the minister cannot have and order in the public interest. Now, if you look at for all we remove, and especially the committee, we're removing the public interest. Then the committee was going to decide on the rest of the provision.
Chair, can I add value as to why?
Okay.
Yes, I can. Amazingly, I can, Chair. We had envisaged this, two things. One, the status of the paralegals, the possibility that they might have rights of appearance in regard to certain matters in courts. So that possibility existed. We found that in the future this situation, and we wanted to create the substantive legislation to allow for that to happen. The other aspect arising out of the interrogation of legal services would be the role of in-house legal counsel. To what extent would the investigation of these inquiries go that will reflect on whether that would be possible for that to happen? So essentially, the need to create within the bill a provision that could perhaps give rise to that future event was the reason as to why we kept it. And what we did was we separated it from after consultation and put it under four, the minister made in consultation. So my recollection is based on that, on those submissions.
You see, that's what I was raising when I said this may have been meant to address the previously disadvantaged.
In-house legal counsel?
No, paralegal.
Mm.
You know, if you go to the rural area, the lawyers want to go to the city, they won't go there. Now you find that there are law students coming from those rural areas who wouldn't mind to work from there, but they can't be admitted. Now, if you give the minister this power, then you are actually affirming the paralegal and the disadvantaged communities, because they can even get people who speak their own language, who live amongst them, to do. But by putting in consultation, then you are giving the council, which is based in the city, veto rights over the minister.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now that was denied indeed added value, but you know, that is another subject for an inquiry. In-house legal counsel in itself is a big subject. Our researchers have given us some comparative work on how they are dealt with in the US and elsewhere. It's a difficult subject. Difficult subject, very difficult. It in itself, we read India, Zimbabwe, Nigeria. Now don't ever blame me, I'm ek is 'n Afrikaanse boere republikein meneer. Ek volg nie Engeland blindelings na nie. Ja, nou ja, maar ek volg nie Engeland blindelings na. And we really have read our way around the world. So I mean that in itself is an inquiry. The paralegal, but surely we've already created something somewhere for, because we know that we have to get to the paralegal.
Mm.
It's already in this bill somewhere. It's not that we're not legislating now. It's already somewhere. These are both subjects for proper inquiries by the Legal Practice Council. It's what it's there for. It's what justifies its existence. So the minister mustn't even, on an in-consultation basis, council must go and do inquiries, then report, and the ideal route is report to the minister, who will table in parliament. If he decides to legislate, we will legislate properly. But that's not the right place. Rights of appearance of foreigners, okay, you want him to be able to do that only after. I would make that in. I agree that we should allow him to give effect to reciprocal international agreements. You can't go around negotiating the gaps for years, and we know how complicated those negotiations are, and then come back and let a local council veto it. So that's fine, A and B. But I suggest we remove 4. By all means, let's check whether we've looked after legal, paralegal, I think we have somewhere, for the future. But the matter of in-house legal counsel is one of those many, many categories which must stand over until we've sorted out the basic stuff. It's a difficult question.
Why the profession is self-regulatory.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, protect me, please.
I'm sure you, you could
say protection.
You cannot interrupt.
You could see that the Honorable Dinsmore has been interrupting Honorable Shah, but he is blaming me. I only spoke when you allowed me to speak.
can I he did say the maiden speech. We don't treat people of doing maiden speech harshly. The researcher has drawn my attention to clause number 35. No time. we are rounding off. 34 sub clause 11. The council must, within 2 to 3 years after the commencement of Chapter 2 of this Act, investigate and make recommendations to the Minister on the creation of other forms of legal practice, including limited liability, legal practices, multidisciplinary practices, and the statutory recognition of paralegals.
I hear that. You know, the rule says justice delayed is justice denied. After 2 or 3 years, there must be an investigation. After that investigation, which can take another 2 to 3 years. And then they must go to the meeting. I really don't think this thing is necessary.
Yeah.
The paralegals are in reality. They even have a national association of paralegals.
Mm-hmm.
And we insert that clause. We don't even make provision for their participation in deciding their future.
No, I think that
That decision was wrongly taken with a jury.
Can I
one second at a time, please?
I'm not on. Yeah, no. You see, I mean, I also find the fact that it's only 2 years after Chapter 2 comes into effect that they will be reporting on the high legal cost. Now, that really bugs me. And for that reason, there's no other way you can do it. But for that reason, I'm going to recommend when we get there some wonderful Australian stuff, which we should touch on. The Australians have wonderful sections on disclosure. Before a lawyer starts working for you, you've got to know what this thing is going to cost, or is going to come back to you midstream and stuff. So there are two things. It's the disclosure of costs, and there's another one I want to recommend to you. It's from our researchers' paperwork. And perhaps, Chair, our committee secretary can see that everybody gets it before we reach that clause, which would be, would we reach it tomorrow? I don't know. But it's a good idea for people to have a look at it anyway. The memorandum is called Notes on the Australian Legal Profession Legislation, and it's Division 3 and 4 thereof. Which, and see, I think we should legislate that right away. Right away. Because the inquiry is going to take 4 years hence, 4 or 5 years hence. Yeah. There's some stuff we can do for our people now. So it would be nice if everyone could have a look at that.
And also,
there is an inherent conflict of interest. The attorneys are afraid of the paradigm because they will be competition. So they will investigate endlessly. So I also agree with Ms. Matondo, she grounds me on this, that we should act in that way.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to allow Kokana to be the last speaker before we close, because if we look at the time.
can I say, I think it's for the benefit of the committee members. When I was looking for articles, I was dismissed by receptionist, office by office, I will get in and say, I would like to talk to Ms. Van der Merwe. And then they will say, Varmie. And then I will say, Exup Articles. The receptionist there will say, Nye, or say, Nye Articles. Or something. I went, it was in Witbank. I went to something like 3 offices. I couldn't get to the attorney until I got the hot house. And then I phoned. I phoned a certain Herbert Ferreira. He was from Cape Town. I tried to trace him. I can't find him. I wanted to thank him to where I am today. I said to the receptionist who picked the phone, data problem, environmental problem, and then immediately she put me through. I said, hey, I get a student, I get a B-Proc, I took articles. He said, come by a hole. I was able to get in clandestinely to say I've got a problem. And then I brought my degree. I said, I've got a B-Proc. I want articles. And then he said, I need 100%. I said, I was at the commissioner's office. I said, I must work here for a month there. He said, do that and come back. And that's how I got in. I'm supporting your view, Mr. to say we must not put every authority on the legal practitioners to say it is them who will think about people who are not within, because they may be part of our statement.
2 points, Chair, and the other one I wish to make it because tomorrow I am not available. One is there's already a process underway to look at the paralegal dispensation, and that discussion is ongoing, which may lead to legislation around that area. I think when we took it out, the insurance and legal counsel's bill, there was that understanding that it's a separate industry that requires its own attention, its own focus. Now, I do not anticipate that the provision in the legal counsel's bill will basically stop the minister from the legislation any time to regulate that, because the minister will still have the power to do so. Similarly, even in the similar way of the costing, even though the preferred option of the bill is to allow the whole review around the costing mechanism for fees, whatever. The minister already contemplated to the president when the Supreme Court Act was adopted that the Rules Board Act needs to be revised completely. And already the aspect of the fee that we are going to contemplate within that revised arrangement. So what I'm trying to say is that while these are putting the ambition way down the line, 2 years after the bill, which will be 2018-2020, because there still must be a transitional council, then the council must come into place in 2018-2019, then they have two years, 2020-2021. The world might have changed dramatically by that time. In fact, we may not even need to do that in this case, because we have settled most of the issues. I just wanted to indicate that we do not understand this provision to be saying to the minister or to government that you cannot continue to engage and provide legislation to transform certain aspects into the practical, into the
agree. we were running 13 legal advice centers throughout the country during the state of emergency. And the paralegals that we were working with were able to draft papers, were able to do things. They were not qualified. Most of the people who were disappearing in the real areas relied on those paralegals. So if people have been paralegals, they are there in the real areas, why should we wait until 2018 for them to practice? It doesn't need the whole act. It just needs a paragraph to give the minister the power to allow those people to practice. If he's satisfied, we can put criteria that they must meet certain standards. One paragraph, the job is done.
Can we end there, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen? Thank you for your time. Thank you for the input. We'll meet tomorrow in same venue of the monitor.
Maybe it's premature, but is there an indication, are we sitting tomorrow just for arrangements in terms of travel, or are we sitting tomorrow afternoon, I mean? Are we continuing tomorrow afternoon just so that we can book that?
Sitting afternoon tomorrow. We'll be sitting tomorrow until afternoon. It's only on Thursday where we will be having the interviews for the Human Rights Commission, honorable members, on Thursday the 5th. I think the shortlisted candidates have been invited already. Certain time? No, it's interview. 9 o'clock. Certain time, 9 o'clock on Thursday. Let us be punctual and then let us not keep them long. If I'm speaking to the chairperson, let us know. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.